Thank you.
Thanks for the introduction. And first of all, thanks, big thanks, big, big thanks for the good angels who brought me here. It's really a great place, and having a shot of good science and good people, it's really amazing. So I had sold something about stochastic quantum thermodynamics, and so this will be more a lecture slash something on my own research, but probably rather in the end. But we need to set up the stage, and actually setting up the stage will take probably 1 hour or something. Here is the title. And it's meant like a lecture, so I'm going to write on the board, and maybe you get bored, I don't know. So you go on very, very loudly.
Don't bother. The rules are, you bother.
Yeah, exactly. So it's basics on quantum stochastic thermodynamics. And actually, I first want you to get the general picture. So the general picture is like chronological. It all starts with microscopic, or say classical thermodynamics. So here are in the 19th, basically. Then we go in the 20th, when we get stochastic thermodynamics. And here we are, 21st. And here there is quantum stochastic thermodynamics. And actually, from here to here, it's kind of straight, and from here to here, it's like.
I would disagree with the fact that it's straight there.
Okay. But here it's really, maybe at this time it's almost people dependent, you know? And what I mean is like here it's kind of interpretation dependent. And you're going to understand why in a minute. So, this is something that nobody discusses anymore. With a properly established legacy. The legacy is about engines. It's about, difference between work and heat, and basically fundamental bounds. Fundamental bounds that basically come from time arrow. So this, we all agree on this. Merci.
Oui, but you know, there are people, established people, that still don't agree with that first arrow.
Okay. Is that okay if I do like this? And I don't explain what is it, but anyway.
I would disagree with the order. I think somehow quantum stochastic thermodynamics was first, so it was in the 70s of the century.
It's good that we have the clock now. So this is microscopic. Then here we go to stochastic thermodynamics, and basically here, and I will present this in obviously more details during the presentation. We see thermodynamics like a theory. Well, I see stochastic thermodynamics as a theory of noise. Well, control against noise. And the key word here is stochastic. Actually, when you go to stochastic thermodynamics, you realize that everything that you've understood here can be understood here, but this is all built on stochasticity, which means randomness. Okay? Randomness is the key, and this is what I'm going to talk about, basically. And that's why I need to present this whole scenery. because here it's so difficult to arrive here and to get something of some sort of unified picture and unified consensus about the concepts that we are building. Because the randomness in quantum physics, we don't all agree on what it means, because it's related to the measurement postulate. And we all know here that the measurement postulate, we don't understand it in the same way. But, well, I'm really giving you the general picture here before I start, but the nice thing with the interpretations is that they are metaphysics, right? In the sense that we all go, in the end, with the same math, we all go, in the end, with the same result of experiment. So right now we are disagreeing on the concepts, but what we are going to compute and model and check experimentally will be the same. So actually, hopefully in the end, will be like this. Because we discover that all the concepts we have built, which are different right now because we have different vision on the measurement postulate, in the end that will be the same. So basically, yeah, that's the general picture. So now, I'm starting, I mean, this is also the plan of the presentation. I'm starting from here, trying to actually extract the kind of intuitions that we've built in the classical regime. Because, yeah, the last point I want to tell you about the general picture is that these two theories here, they involve a certain kind of randomness, a certain kind of stochasticity, which is thermal. We are basically playing, since the very beginning, with thermal baths. Okay? But the nice thing with stochastic thermodynamics is that it's building some mathematical frameworks that is basically independent of the source of randomness that you're going to use. And the whole game, and this is what I'm going to do, is to present you some techniques and concepts that have been built with thermal randomness, pick up the thermal dice, replace it by a quantum dice, and see what pops out from it. Okay? So that's the goal of the lecture, and actually that's the goal of my research, basically. So first, macroscopic classical thermodynamics. Well, and as you may have noticed, I like philosophy, so sometimes I say something that obviously not all of you will agree on, so at some point to avoid big discussions I will do like this, or I will warn you that it's my personal interpretation just to avoid exploding this clock. Okay, so what macroscopic thermodynamics has given you since the beginning is a scenery. So the scenery is that we have a working substance that is interacting on the one hand with heat baths and exchanging heat, and on the other end, interacting with some operator, some battery or whatever, exchanging work. So it gives us the first law, and it gives us a first demarcation line between heat and work. In macroscopic thermodynamics, the demarcation line between heat and work is that work is kind of reversible, okay? If you just exchange work with a guy, then you can always think about reversing the protocol and you will be able to reverse time. Whereas for heat, there is some sort of time error already that is associated with heat because, well, heat flows from hot bodies to cold bodies. So this helped to build the notion of entropy. And it started actually with the very empirical Clausius inequality. Which tells us that if a system is coupled to a series of heat baths, a sequence of heat baths, the heat exchanges and the temperatures will follow this inequality. That's Clausius inequality. And actually, I'm just saying that. First, it is my warm-up, so all of you may know that, but I prefer saying it. This gave rise to the notion of entropy, because now you can have you can think about a reversible cycle. Then you would have something like this. Then you can split the reversible cycle into two parts. One reversible plus one irreversible. And this, in the end, brings you to this expression of the second law. So this allows to build entropy, the change of entropy of a system. So this is delta S, basically. And we have delta S minus Q over T, which is, sorry. Okay, and this is an expression of the second law for an isothermal transformation. Okay, so why am I saying you this? Because actually, in the legacy of macroscopic thermodynamics, I told you about time arrow, and the idea that in physics we are able to quantify time arrow. So this is meant to be positive, and here I'm going to introduce a quantity. So I guess it was not already called entropy production at the old time, but I'm going to call it entropy production right now, because this is a quantity that will reappear later. So entropy production can be written like this, and it's positive. Another expression of the second law is that here you have the change of entropy of the system, and here somehow you have the change of entropy of the thermal bath, and the sum of both is a closed system, and this actually is nothing but stating that the entropy of an isolated system can only increase. Okay, but you see here it's a very empirical approach about this time arrow. So now we are still in the 19th century. 19th century. Jet lag. I'm going to say jet lag many times. So people at the time, they are interested in heat engines. So actually, with this, and that will close my small introduction on the 19th century, is that with these two equality, you end up with this one, which will reappear many times later as well, because it's a C, the Jarzynski equality and everything. It's that during some isothermal transformation, the work minus the change of free energy equals this entropy production.
You say isothermal, right? But it should be when you go away from this isothermal condition.
Yeah, but so far I build with these are transformations with a heat bath. So it's this. I'm describing isothermal transformations, right? Yeah, I'm not going to make a lecture on macroscopic thermodynamics because I guess you guys are already bored. So I'm really trying to make it fast. But just write down the essential expression that will reappear later in a different context, because these are the expressions that are building our intuition. And typically, this one is really building the intuition. This is basically what we want to find out. Okay, but I'm going fast. So this.
Alexia?
Yes?
I know if you want to go fast, but I also have maybe this right now. I also have a question about this. This passage when from this red box, and you say that that method is not able to I always had problems with this, not with the statement, that's fine, but with the passing from that square box to this statement. Because
I'm separating two entropies.
Yeah, but the point is, you are considering here a process that is irreversible, is not a reversible process in general. So this Q over T is a heat exchange during an irreversible path.
Yeah.
So I'm not allowed to identify that with entropy. So what I learned from the speaking 19th century thermodynamics is that the entropy is the is this integral delta Q over T, but for a reversible path.
Yeah, but for the system.
So and this is what I don't understand. How can something be reversible from the perspective of the system and irreversible from the perspective of the path?
Yeah, so here we are almost in a, well, these are kind of textbook stuff that we say without really thinking about this deeply. But I would say that the bath is a big guy that you almost don't describe, so if it gets a pinch of heat, it couldn't care less, and it's still at equilibrium. That's what I would say. But, well... So if you don't like this sentence,
no, the sentence is the way I usually would end up
but
saying.
But the equivalence between this sentence and this red box, you can
yes,
remove it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I have no problem with that. But actually, I've said it still because yeah. Well, enough with philosophy. I prefer moving on a little bit. Okay, so this is a fundamental bound.
I would like to add also something. I mean, that's basically the contribution of phenomenological non-equilibrium. Open system non-equilibrium thermodynamics. This fits totally with the Donder Prigogine phenomenological way of formulating thermodynamics, and it is an extension of the classical purely equilibrium thermodynamics. And
yeah,
if you want to recover the traditional statement, it's rather than saying isolated system is Q equal to zero, and then you
say it again.
So I think from an historical perspective, this comes a bit later. This is associated...
This?
No, the equation above.
Yeah.
It's when people were already reasoning about chemistry, irreversible chemistry, open systems,
okay,
that they started reasoning that way by assigning Q over T to a kind of entropy of the bath, an ideal bath, which is always at equilibrium.
So basically, historically, you would basically go directly from this clausius inequality to that statement by considering an isolated system for which the total heat is null, is zero.
Yeah.
And you split it in two parts, and one would be
reversible.
So you do the same trick, one is reversible, but the other one is zero, so you get the less likely than zero.
Yeah. Okay.
For the whole total system.
I mean, there is nothing, but it's something that I always had this problem in understanding why it's a process, because reversibility is a process.
So, apparently here the philosophy is, it is reversible from the viewpoint of the system, here at the back, and irreversible from the viewpoint of the system. This is something
that... This delta S refers to as if you've done between the same endpoints, you've done a reversible process, right? It's not really this entropy, it's the thermodynamic entropy.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's something else, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I just wanted to...
Thank you for the exchange, because this is something I really want to pinpoint. I told you, I'm going to search for the intuition that we take from the classical regime and see how they influence our way to build quantum thermodynamics. And typically here, we have this idea that entropy production should reflect the entropy of some closed system, which is something that in the quantum regime we may get rid of. I mean, I'm fighting for us to get rid of this idea, because there are other sources of randomness that come into play, and we won't necessarily have this idea of I should describe the whole system and the whole world, especially the measuring apparatus that I won't describe, because it's a classical guy. Okay? So, well. you need to be aware of that to be able, after that, to choose it and not to be influenced by it unconsciously. Okay? Right. So now, just a few words about engines. Well, I don't know how to move on with this because now I'm. So the idea is that this time arrow here gives us the price. It's wrong. You could have changed it. Yeah. You had noticed it for a long time, but please tell me.
I thought you put T equal to 1.
KB a lot, but not T yet. So.
It's not quantum information.
That's true.
Yeah, so what I want to say here is that, for instance, if you do have a system that is coupled to, again, a heat bath of temperature T, and you want to extract work from this system using some transformation, you need to be gentle, because otherwise you won't extract the maximum amount of work that you want. And so this is a fundamental bound, and in the same way, if you want to increase the free energy of the system, you need to pay attention and be gentle, otherwise you will have to pay more than what you would pay if you were gentle. And these fundamental bounds, they are basically related to time arrow. So, and here we have a connection between energetics and time arrow. Okay? So, well, this is all obvious for you, but I just wanted to state it properly.
Somehow I always feel uncomfortable when you speak about work extraction from a single bus. Maybe it could be nice to add few bus with different temperatures.
Okay, so yeah, I know. And actually, okay, so let's state it properly, because this is what I wanted to do, but given that we exchange, right? So here you have a formula that carries everything that you need to do with an engine. With an engine, there is a work extraction step. So, cyclic engine, so this is special dedicated for you, cyclic engine. Cyclic engine has practically two steps at least, but one
not
that
we... Me, you should say that all engines are cyclic.
You know, I'm a good girl. All engines are cyclic. So there is a work extraction step where you need to be gentle, or otherwise you don't extract all the work that you want. And there is something that we can call a reset, where you need to reinitialize your engine such that you prepare it again in a state of high free energy. And yeah. And actually, here, and here is the connection with information that you may like less, this idea that actually the reset, you can get rid of the reset by using information in this Maxwell's demon engine. So, the reset can be, how would I say? You can apparently, and don't worry, I'm finishing here, get rid of this by using information. That's all this idea of Maxwell demon. But in the end of the day, this is just an illusion, because information is physical and you need to remove, erase the memory. Okay, so...
So Alexia, sorry, before, I just want to understand. So you start system in thermal state, and then you do whatever you want in terms of a transformation, and then you have a state which is not thermal, and you're saying that you come in from the outside and do something there. Is that what you mean?
Well, I did not really describe... Actually, the pictures that I have in mind here is more about Carnot engine. So in Carnot engine, you would let the guy expand.
But there's only one bath here, right? So
No. The reset is in another bus.
I see. So what is the reset? So that's what I don't understand.
Ah, okay. So that's bus of temperature T1 and bus of temperature T2. During the work extraction step, your guy heated up and goes from, well, it's an expansion.
Okay.
You start from here and up here. And at this point here, you can't do anything anymore because there's no expansion possible. So you need to reset it here. And during this reset, that's where you need to pay.
Right, but where do you get the work from then? I mean, you extract as much as you put in.
What?
I mean, if you have one bath. I mean, I always thought...
No, there is one bath of temperature T1 here and one bath of temperature T2 here. It's Carnot. It's just Carnot engine.
So you assume two baths, two temperatures.
Yes.
Fine, okay.
Yes. No problem. And what I'm saying is that the idea of the Maxwell demand is just to be able to use information to reset the engine, apparently at no cost, because it's just using information and feedbacking, supposing that you can feedback without paying any energy. And then you have the feeling that you can extract work from a single heat hot source, but that's not the case because actually, if you take into account the memory, you create correlations and you need to erase the memory in the end. Is that okay? I'm not detailing because actually, I don't exactly know what's your background here. We are all in thermodynamics, but some of you are in many bodies. So information engine, this is something that I don't have to explain it too much, or no, I don't. Perfect.
The Szilard engine and the example?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, so now I'm jumping, now that there are a few expressions that I want us to keep in mind, which is this one, and this one. I'm jumping to stochastic thermodynamics. So in stochastic thermodynamics, the paradigm is completely different because we are not playing with a large amount of particle anymore. We are not playing in some effective world anymore. We are playing with working substances that are small system with a given, small system. And this small system is interacting with, I would say, controlling entity. So this is the control here. On the one hand, and on the other hand, it's interacting with a dice, an entity that perturbs the system in a stochastic manner. So control, and there is a stochastic perturbation. So we are typically talking about Brownian motion. You pick up one molecule and it undergoes shocks from other molecules. This is random, okay? And so here we need to understand and redefine what we mean by heat, work, and time arrow, right? So as much as in the macroscopic regime, heat and work, we were using reversibility and maybe not reversibility to understand what it means. Here, it's more related to this idea of control and stochasticity. So work is basically exchanged with the controlling entity, and heat is exchanged in a stochastic manner with the stochastic perturbation, the stochastic entity that perturbs the system. I'm going to pick up an example. My small system, so you know I come from atomic physics, so in general my small systems, they are two-level atoms. So example, two-level atom. I have a control entity that will change, so the control, it changes the energy level. So typically, here I have 0, here I have 1. E0 equals 0 and E1 of T. And I do have some stochastic perturbation. Which is thermal. So it typically gives rise to transition rate like this of emission and absorption. Okay? So heat is exchanged with the thermal bath. And work is exchanged with the control.
Can you say a bit more about what you mean by stochastic perturbation is thermal?
Here, you do have transition rate that are imposed by heat bath. So typically, your gamma minus here will be a gamma n bar plus 1, and gamma up will be gamma n bar, where n bar is the number of photons. And it's described by a Lindbladian that is
I guess I don't understand why.
Why? No, it's an example. So you don't have to understand why.
Okay,
it's an example.
Also, still, why do you choose that in an example? Is this just for convenience?
Because it's simple. Because it carries inside Jarzynski, it carries inside Landauer, Szilard, everything. Actually, everything is in this example.
Right. This is a lot. I don't quite understand this. But anyway, that's a different story. The Pell balance in Jarzynski, I don't see the connection.
Oh, this is coming.
Okay, good.
This is coming right now. So, here. So, I told you we're going to understand what is heat and work in this scenery. But now we need to understand what is entropy production. Okay? And actually, so in the case of this macroscopic thermodynamics, what we've seen is that entropy production is some increase of entropy of a closed system, right? In stochastic thermodynamics, it's just completely different. In stochastic thermodynamics, what you imagine is that you are trying to impose a protocol on your system with an h of t, right? So you run the protocol in the direct sense, and then you try to reverse the movie, okay? But so if there is no stochastic perturbation here, you will be able to completely reverse the movie, and you will perfectly be able to come back to the initial state. That's a reversible transformation. Reversible means full control, whereas on the other end, if there is a stochastic perturbation, in most of the cases, you won't be able to go back to the initial state, and irreversibility means that you don't have full control. Okay? So it's really a complete different picture and completely different flavor of what irreversibility means. And this, again, we can quantify this. So how do we quantify this? We are going to quantify this by focusing on something I have not precised yet, but I'm going to do it immediately. The dynamics of the system is a stochastic trajectory. In the phase space of the system. So typically, in the example of the qubit, not the qubit, but the two-level system here, that's my stochastic trajectory. That's time, and that's state 0 and state 1. That is probability. State 0, state 1. Okay? So that's a stochastic trajectory. And what we are going to define is a stochastic entropy production, meaning a quantity, a mathematical quantity, that will quantify irreversibility at the scale of a single trajectory. And actually, the idea is very intuitive. You build this quantity by comparing the probability of being run in the direct sense to the probability of the reverse trajectory by applying the reverse protocol. So it's really like super intuitive. And it's written like this. So delta IS now of gamma, it's the logarithm of P of gamma divided by P tilde of gamma reverse, where P of gamma direct probability of direct trajectory in the direct protocol. And P tilde is the probability of the reverse trajectory in the reverse protocol.
So can I think of that trajectory as a set of events?
Sure. Well, I'm saying sure, but I don't know what you have in mind, so actually could you elaborate?
Well, so I guess it's kind of like the birds that I was talking about. So I'm just looking at a bird appearing at some points in space and time. Those I can think of as events, time-ordered events.
Yeah. So here you do have an example, much way less complicated than the bird, but if you have a two-level system, 0 and 1, it jumps between 0s and 1.
Okay.
That's it.
And then you want exactly those events in the reverse time order for the...
Absolutely. But the probability will not be the same,
sure,
because you're running a reverse protocol. Okay. Right. So before, that's the definition. Before I go to Jarzynski and everything that you asked for, I want to state some mathematical tautologies. Here.
Alexia, could you specify the way the system is initialized?
I'm coming to that, but here I've even not precise that I'm playing with Markovian trajectories at this point.
But you say you apply the same protocol, but this protocol, it's not exactly the same protocol for the forward and the backward trajectory in the sense that...
It is.
But the initial states are the same?
No. But the protocol just tells you how you reverse your Hamiltonian or your stochastic map or whatever. Indeed, after there is a degree of freedom about the kind of initial state in the reverse trajectory you will have to take. But this we will show it for the example of Jarzynski. So far, I just wanted to come to the fluctuation theorem, which again is a mathematical tautology, in the sense that as soon as you have a definition like that, you just have to exponentiate your stochastic entropy production. If you exponentiate this guy, you find P tilde of gamma divided by P of gamma. And now, if you take the average of this over the direct trajectories, you do like this. You do like this, and you end up with the sum over all direct trajectories of the reverse trajectories in the reverse protocol. And this, in general, it's 1. I'm saying in general because there are pathological cases of absolute irreversibility, and I guess I won't have much time to explain it, but in general, we are going to say that it's 1 here. And that's what it's called integral fluctuation theorem. Actually, this guy is the seed for all fluctuation theorems that you're going to find after that. Because this is math, but then you're going to inject physics, find for any kind of protocol what does this guy look like, and end up with Jarzynski and everything. So this I'm going to show you. But in the beginning, it's really basic math. Yes?
So two questions about that.
Yeah.
One, I don't see how you use either the assumptions of Markov trajectory or
not
the
yet.
Detailed balance. That's those statements are independent of.
It's coming.
Okay.
It's coming.
No, but that is independent of.
That is totally independent. You just need a trajectory, well, a set of trajectories and a set of probabilities, well, two sets of probabilities. And for these two sets of probabilities, you will find something that is a fluctuation theorem, which doesn't mean anything if you don't. This is independent. With this, you also have something very cool, which is the fact that the average of entropy production over all trajectories is bigger than zero, is positive, and this is because the convexity of the exponential. So it all nicely matches. Yeah. Okay. So now I'm going to focus on Markovian trajectories. To find what microreversibility is and how it is related to equilibrium.
But Alexia, maybe coming back to the question of basically this definition that you use is dependent on the way you, not only the way you choose your protocol, direct and reverse, but also on the way you choose the initial state of your protocol. Right? Because those probabilities depend on what is the initial statistics.
So far, I have not precised anything that is physical. I'm just doing math. I'm going to physics just right now. Physics, no. Markovian stuff, and as soon as you have Markovian stuff, you can talk about initial and conditional probabilities.
Yeah. Not the initial state matters.
Sorry?
Only the trajectories matter, so the initial state doesn't matter.
I think it matters because to define probability, you need to start from something.
Sure.
Probability.
It can be anything.
Yes,
that's included in the trajectory.
Yes.
On this level, it can be anything.
Can
think yes,
then delta IS is.
But then delta IS. So this is tautology, indeed. So
at this level, it's just math, right?
Because I like simple stuff, I'm just going to play with 2-point trajectories. Because actually, there is everything inside. So you pick up a state, sigma I, and so you are at time zero, and I apply a stochastic map that will bring me to sigma j, at time t1. Okay, that's my transformation, and that's my 2-point trajectory. So now I can write down p of gamma, which is the probability at time t0 to have the state sigma I, multiplied by the conditional probability of getting sigma g starting from sigma I. And then, what is the reversed trajectory? So, the reversed trajectory is p1 of sigma g which is the probability that you have, taking into account all the possible trajectories, starting from other points, because here I've just pinpointed a pair of sites, but there are many other guys around. Okay, so with this, my distribution changes in time. Here, the whole distribution of all the guys, P0 of sigma, say sigma k, and here distribution is P1 of sigma k. Okay. So this is the starting point of my reverse trajectory. And then the reverse protocol, it's the same stochastic map, basically. It's the same stochastic map. But now I need to consider the rate of probability of going from sigma g to sigma I. Is that okay? There are eyebrows like this, so I want to make sure it's okay.
So you're saying it's the same stochastic map in general?
Yeah.
Or in your example?
No. Yeah. To define equilibrium.
Suppose I have my stochastic map takes all my initial states to state zero.
Yeah.
So are you now saying that the reverse map is also taking all my states to state zero? Or am I acting the stochastic map backwards?
Your stochastic map is perfectly defined by all the transition rates towards all the sites. Okay? So it may change in time.
I agree with that.
But, okay, I think you can calculate this transition map using somehow Markov unity. So you have kind of master equation, and then you solve this master equation, you have this propagator, let's call it.
Yeah.
But it depends on your control. So do you reverse also control? For example, in this first step, you increase energy difference between these levels.
Yeah.
So does it mean that in the reverse process, you decrease this?
Yeah.
So this is not the same map.
True. But I picked up 2 points, just a 2 point trajectory to avoid this kind of problem.
No, but we.
So that's why I'm asking whether it's in your example or in general.
Because even with two level system, you have this problem. You can go in this direction and then you can reverse.
But when you pick when you consider the jump, it must be this map at this time. Okay?
Yes, and what does it mean reverse map? It's like a movie backwards that you, from, for example, expanding energy, you reduce energy?
It's pretty operational. Right? In the sense, what you control is what you control, and this is what you can reverse. The stochastic entity, you are not paid to be able to reverse it.
Yes,
so it follows.
But control part, you can reverse, and you get different maps.
Absolutely. The control acts over the map. Absolutely. So the map will change as a function of time. Okay, let's pick
up. So this map cannot be the same.
Mathematically, it's the same map, you time reverse.
Let's pick up this example. The example where I have two level system and I increase the energy levels, okay? So, and let's consider this time where there is a jump that is happening, okay? So indeed, the probabilities of going down or of going up, they depend on the time. Because, yeah, the larger you are, the more you feel like going to the ground state. But at this very time, this is the map at this very time that you consider to compute the probability of going down or in the reverse trajectory of going up.
So it's because you look
is
at
that,
something.
Is that clear?
It's because you look at something like Markov, then so you don't take into account the time that it took to go from one place to the other.
I think you would call this a geometric limit. Would you agree?
I think the adiabatics is behind it, because otherwise it doesn't make sense at all.
In the quantum case, you have a unitary one way, and the reverse would be U dagger, right?
Yes.
So it's not the same map.
But unitary and Markovians are completely disjoint.
So I think we need to precise. We need to.
Although they are called to the same fluctuation theory, they are completely different tautologies.
Yes.
Fine.
The way I see it is this way. So you're considering here a case where you just are changing the level space. So this is the fact by itself. does not make your system detransitions, right? Because what you're doing is something that an operation that the root becomes done. So I think what he's trying to say, or maybe one other way to look at it, is that these transitions, yes, they are due to the bath, but in principle they can also be due to your external convention. So if you just change the level spacing, that's not vulnerability case.
Well, but you can change it like this, right? No, but you can cross and then
not only that, you can apply this a unitary as probably saying that does not commute to the other system.
And then I introduce
transitions, then in that case I would put the on the
reverse. Yes, I think one should put something.
So either it is adiabatic or it doesn't or it doesn't.
Can I say something? I think here what you have in mind, Robert, is probably a problem of physics of how do we derive the Lindblad equation that is related to this Hamiltonian specifically. But this expression here, you can think about stochastic maps without trying to think about is it due to the control operator or is it due to the change of the bath or some reservoir engineering or whatever. It's just a dice that I throw. Gives me a map of arrows towards the different sites of my system, and that's it. I can think about this completely independently of how I generated this map physically, right? And indeed, my map may depend on time here, but here, what I'm going to use to compute the reverse trajectory is the map at the very time of the jump, okay? Does it clarify your question, Kevin?
So, I mean, the reason why I ask this question is because when I read papers by all of you people, this is very unclear, because no one seems to write this down clearly, and I feel like, so blame belongs to everyone.
Is there some hidden assumption of bistochasticity of the map? Because this is, like...
I don't know.
Because the map has to be bistochastic.
What is bistochasticity?
So are these conditional probabilities, is P sigma j sigma I equal to P sigma I P sigma j? So the other way around.
Not necessarily. Bistochasticity doesn't imply that probabilities are the same.
Yeah, yeah, so it implies infinite temperature.
It just means that the map can act both ways.
I see.
The matrix.
But is that assumed there?
No, I'm sure. No.
Okay. By bistochasticity, you mean this guy is equal to this guy?
No.
So I don't understand.
But Alex, I'm surprised by what you say that the driving can induce transitions? No.
No.
Okay. No, I thought this is what.
No.
Because then I think the simple mathematical statement is simply that if you have a non-autonomous dynamics, then when you calculate the backward path, you have to reverse the non-autonomous features of the map, which means that mathematically the map is not the same.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's, I think, the mathematical statement.
So can
again,
I ask you?
I didn't, here I've made no assumptions about the way I generate the map. I'm just playing with simple transition rates.
Sure.
That's it.
Sorry, one more comment. Yes. Suppose you were to change that bottom P into a different letter Q, would it make any difference for your next line?
What do you want to do?
The yeah, transition process
is a different one. That would make a difference.
Instead of taking P0 in the P tilde, instead of taking P0, you pick some other map.
You would have something like this, but the reverse protocol would be different. And that's it. And probably the physical interpretation would be different. And, And it would correspond to having a distance that is different. I mean, your reference state would be different. Okay? So, I think we have extracted anything that we can bring to equations. Are they... is that okay?
But can I ask, sorry, if you have the example of the two levels, with the separation is delta E.
Yeah.
So your forward process is delta E of T is some linear ramp.
Yeah.
And your backward process is just minus t?
Yeah.
So you're reversing the control, you're not reversing the dynamics.
Absolutely. I'm reversing the control. I'm reversing what I control.
I think maybe with Kavan, maybe the doubt is that in the quantum case you will reverse the U and U dagger, which is not the same as the
I don't think we will arrive to the quantum case.
Okay. I know. We can continue discussion some other time. Okay. But this is what you're doing.
Yeah. So are we done? So I actually, with these two equations, my plan is to explain how equilibrium is related to micro-reversibility and how we relax towards equilibrium. And I think we'll take a break after that. Okay. So there is something I didn't fully extract from here. I said here this is second law, right? But the definition of equilibrium, I mean, in our the way our brain is plugged, is that this guy, for reversible transformation, or if the system is at equilibrium, delta IS equals zero, right? And the only way delta IS equals zero here is that whichever trajectory gamma, P of gamma in the direct protocol equals the reverse probability of the reverse trajectory the probability of the reverse trajectory in the reverse protocol. Okay? Oh, there are no questions. Yes. So now if I apply this to this two-point trajectory, what is equilibrium in that case? The equilibrium distribution. So that I will denote P infinite of sigma I verifies P of gamma equals P tilde of gamma reverse, meaning P infinite of sigma I P. So you allow me to get rid of this index here because we are considering now a constant map to have equilibrium. So P sigma G knowing sigma I equals blah, blah, blah. So what? Is there a jet lag problem here? No? No? Okay. So given a stochastic map, I can define a property of equilibrium. So this basically means that equilibrium, in that case, well, equilibrium means micro-reversibility or detailed balance, if you like. Which is not a given. Actually, there may be stochastic maps where there are no equilibrium that exists. There will be a steady state, but not necessarily an equilibrium. Equilibrium really means that whichever pair of sites you will find, you will have this equality which guarantees you that no entropy is produced somewhere. There is another thing then that we can extract from these two equations here, which is delta IS of gamma. So this is logarithm. So now suppose that we are not at equilibrium, right? There is an equilibrium that exists, but we start from a distribution which is not equilibrium. And I apply the map. So the entropy that is produced in that case is the logarithm of P0 of sigma I, divided, I can rewrite it, minus logarithm of p1 of sigma g divided by p infinite of sigma g. And now, when I average over all trajectories, which basically means averaging over all couples sigma I and sigma g, I'm finding here the distance that you were mentioning before, Michele. This is the distance of, I would say, p0 with respect to p equilibrium minus the distance of p1 with respect to equilibrium. And this is positive. So this tells you that each time you apply the stochastic map, you lower the distance between your distribution and the equilibrium distribution. Okay? And actually, I won't demonstrate it, but you can find the same kind of fluctuation theorem and the same kind of property if you have a steady state. So, Massimiliano worked on that. The fact that the reverse protocol won't be the same, but you can find typically the same kind of property. Break.
Okay, so we're stopping now for a break.